Hey guys, welcome in. It's Unpaved with Sean Salisbury along with my guy Adam Sager. JB, who's normally on Mondays, know he had a meeting, but we, because the doubleheader on Monday night moved him, plus we had a technology issue, and it wasn't Sager, it wasn't me, it wasn't Triple E, and it wasn't JB. Rumble's technology issue that we got solved after I've done cooling off here for a second. When you're seeing red, like I'm seeing right now, but we're 30 minutes late starting. It won't happen again, I promise you. Go to YouTube, go to iTunes, go to Spotify and every place else. I promise you, this won't happen again, but you can always get us live on all of them. And we'll start at 12 Central most every single day. And it's a bummer because it's late. You guys deserve better. So we're sorry for making you wait. Appreciate your patience with us. We'll get it handled or we'll get it handled. Does that make sense? So JB will join us Wednesday right at noon to catch up on the weekend stuff and all of that. And, you know, back to, listen, you're never going to get back to the reality of what's going on in our country. I mean, or we're back to the reality of what's going on in our country. The things sit you on your on your ear regularly. And the back and forth fighting segs. That's going on in our country right now. Sports is needed today. It's just needed. Keeps me off Twitter, even though I'm enlightened by the great stuff that people care about somebody who just wanted to, you know, be a God-fearing man. I get the hunch that, and I don't want to talk about this long, but the same people that invented the cancel culture are now the ones bitching about it. Well, you know what? If you're going to root on somebody's death, you know what? I know a lot of people that have died in an unfortunate circumstances and they were uncontrollable or somebody's automobile accident or somebody fell asleep, but this was controllable. And unfortunately, nut jobs think this is funny and there's nothing funny about losing Charlie Kirk. And we had a great show. If you missed it, go back. And it was last week. Go back and check it out. It was a tribute to him. So listen, the day and JB had mentioned to me that, you know, people that you've had friends with 30 years because you may support Charlie Kirk, but if you don't, losing friendships. People are, they have gone absolutely haywire. And to root on somebody's, that they're dead, to me, I'll never, that's a bit of evil I don't get because I know that nobody deserved to die like he died. And it just makes me sick to my stomach. But the hatred, because I told you last week it was us versus us. And it is.
It is
us versus us, whether you like it or not. I've never seen a time that it's just awful. Great to see what some are doing, you know, that honored Charlie Kirk and his impact. Whether you liked his impact or not, he was impactful. Some think it's funny when somebody gets shot, and some even have subscribed to kill the kids and the wife as well. And all this stuff I hear, this trash, and they're laughing. It makes me sick to my stomach, but I'll just say this in a good way. Charlie Kirk was a difference maker. God bless his wife and children. And all those who support him and those that don't, not losing friendship if you don't support him, but you are losing a lot if you celebrate it. It's and you're exactly right, Texas for 80. Celebrating two children growing up without a father is a mental illness. And I got news for you, judging from some of the videos I've seen, there's a lot of fucking mentally ill whack jobs out there. And they all look the same.
They
all seem to look the same and sound. It's like they got some memo from their side that says, here, say this and do this and read the song. And it wouldn't shock me. The man, it sucks to be you guys when you get canceled after you created and say, see, you can't go without a mask on. Or if you say this, or if you don't support somebody getting their pecker cut off and then coming back of the female. Ooh, how dare you not support men and women's sports? We'll cancel you. Fuck you. You ain't canceling anybody. Here's what's happened. You're getting canceled because you're out of control nonsense about rooting on. I would listen. George Floyd didn't deserve to die. No, nobody should have rooted that on. But you also asked to paint him as a hero. Okay, so Charlie Kirk, if you don't want to paint him as a hero, that's fine. But you sure as hell can't root for him to die. We'll all have our thoughts what a hero is and what a hero isn't. But nobody deserved to die like either one of those guys did. The only reason I say that, Six, because I get people on social media constantly comparing the two. The truth of the matter is, nobody deserves to die. And you hope it's not in vain. And to wish it upon other members of the family and the rest of it, I'm not losing a friend over it. If the friend chooses to lose me over it because they celebrate it, I'll just stay away, because that's not the type of human being I ever or even care to think about. Okay, Eric, if you're rooting that on, you can have a lot of differing opinion, but that violence you're rooting it on and laughing like you got the devil in your soul, I got a real problem with it, Segs. And so, and if you got a problem with me because I think Charlie Kirk's a good man that's got a good wife at home, now a good widow and two kids that are going to be raised without the father, listen, you could disagree without losing friendships, without rooting this on. Then nut jobs. And don't bitch to me about you getting losing your job when you're cheering and you're worried about cancel culture when you invented the shit.
Right. Man,
same things that make you cry. Sit back and deal with it or shut your mouth. And you, if you don't want to talk good about them, I mean, what'd your parents tell you growing up? Say you ain't got nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all. Enough. And there's Republicans that are nut jobs too. Don't
be 100%.
It's on both sides. But at no time in my life, regardless if I couldn't stand somebody or disagree with them, do I want somebody to die like Charlie Kirk did or like George Floyd did. How you paint somebody a hero is your own business. But don't bitch one bit about, well, I lost my job because I said I was happy that he got killed and I want his wife and kids to get killed too. When I read that, it's like, really?
Yeah.
Well, freedom of speech. It's freedom of speech, but they're paying you. Freedom of speech right. Under their umbrella. Okay.
Right.
So if you're dumb enough to do it, then your dumb ass should be sitting at home looking for another job. I have zero sympathy. Zero. Okay. Zero. So save it.
I saved this tweet.
It always will be.
Yeah. I saved this tweet just in case this came up in the show. And there was the NFL on Thursday night put up something in that game, and I'm blanking on who the two teams were Thursday night, but they put up a remembering and did a moment of silence.
Wasn't it Washington and Green Bay?
Yes, Washington and Green Bay. And they put up a moment of silence, did all that, put them on the big board, and then the NFL told all the home teams this weekend, it's up to you on for Saturday and then tonight's games. And we had five teams chose not to honor Charlie Kirk. It was Detroit Lions, the Indianapolis Colts, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Minnesota Vikings. Every single one of them honored George Floyd back when he died with a moment of silence. So, I mean, it's just, you know, we talk about, you say free speech like they all want to say when they lose their jobs and everything, but it is. It's a business decision for that person, for, you know, and it can affect their business if someone sees you say it and they know you work in that company, and then they say, okay, well, I'm not giving my business to that company if they, you know, employ somebody with those kinds of crazy thoughts. So it's just insane to me.
It's maddening.
How you can think that way.
You know,
there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, the baffling point of, gosh, I lost my train of thought, was thinking about what you were saying about companies. I mean, you reserve the right to say whatever you want, but if you rob Peter, you better be prepared to pay Paul. Right. I mean, if I have a company and you're working for me and you spew that stuff, if you're different of opinion, you don't like Charlie Kirk, that's fine. You keep your job. Yeah. If you want to go out there and root on somebody's and celebrating somebody's death, there's nothing. I will get rid of you. Yeah. I will flat ass get rid of you because it just has no place, and you're affecting the bottom line for somebody else when it comes to this, when it comes to it. And I just don't get the, I guess first, the hatred for all of us that go with a guy got shot in the neck and people cheering it on. I just don't. Now, listen, the NFL, are we going to get a sign in the back of the on a basketball court that says no political hate? Okay, George Floyd didn't deserve to die, Sakes. Now, I don't look at George Floyd as a hero. I'm sorry. I just don't. I don't look at him here, but I damn well know he didn't deserve to die the way he did. But I also know that whether you think Charlie Kirk's a hero, I think Charlie Kirk is a part of, he was a difference making. And just George Floyd obviously made a difference because moments of silence and people are still talking about it and the difference in their life that he might have made. I get it. Okay. But you can't vilify one and make the other the hero. Okay, right. And there's different circumstances, obviously, but both lives were taken the wrong way, and both lives were taken at a time. Like I said, you decide how much you like either person's life, but to root it on anybody that rooted on George Floyd dying in the streets was by a police officer was is awful, and anybody rooting on Charlie Kirk and their family's death and death to his family and killing the kids and get rid of all of them. And it's absolutely atrocious. And so what I was going to say is, and when you include quotes, when a guy says, "I don't have any empathy," empathy means you can feel what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And no, most of us can't feel what somebody's feeling, what certain families or certain people go through in their life. Then he said, "But I do have sympathy." Sympathy, you can be sympathetic as opposed right. They're different and they have different meanings. But man, if you got a narrative and you want to put a quote up there, you'll make sure you cut it off so it looks bad. So I don't have any sympathy or empathy because I've lived it. They've gone through that cancel stuff. Then don't say something stupid because for clicks and think that people are going to like what you're saying and businesses and companies. If you don't like him, you don't like him. He just died. He died in a way. Charlie, we should be still having Charlie Kirk talking to college campuses yes. as we do before, and we don't. But I know this, that in the process of thinking that they disrupted this revolution, this change, all they did was strengthen another.
They made it louder.
They made it louder and strengthened a movement. It won't go away. So my whole thing about this is you don't have to love one or the other, or Charlie Kirk. I did, and I loved what he was about, and I loved what he stood for, and I always will, and I'll never apologize for it. I'm Team Kirk all the way. But you also, in the process, if you don't love him, that's okay. But you sure as hell can't cheer. I guess you can, but the consequences are if your company finds out and they want to get rid of you, then you're gone. Now, Sigs, one thing I do have to say before I want to get to sports. Charlie Kirk will never be forgotten, and his wife will make sure of it because she seems tough as could be.
Yes.
Is it so? And when I lead the like certain police officers or educators or doctors, so I go into a hospital and I'm a conservative, even though I couldn't tell you right now one of my doctor's affiliations with their political party. I don't know. My eye doctor will give me LASIK. My knee doctors, I've had 5 knee replacements. I don't know who he voted for or what he thinks. But can you imagine going in now, Sigs? It makes me put my head on a swivel that way. First of all, if you have an opinion, we're all supposed to worry that we're going to get shot because we feel that we have an opinion on something. That's one,
right.
Which no, you shouldn't. And secondly, that am I supposed to be concerned now when, well, although I'm not going to be, that you go to a doctor that you're sure they're giving you the proper treatment? Because you're a conservative? Are you getting, I mean, no, you're taking your 4-year-old child in there, wouldn't, or your grandkid. Aren't you thinking twice, Sigs, if they're completely dominant? You can't even go get something printed. Did you see that at one of those
yes.
print places where they're trying to deny and they turn around? I don't feel sorry for her one bit. Or whatever it is, whatever he or she, whatever it is, pronouns they're using, I have no idea. So I just don't get it. But we're at a point now, you walk into a school and you know what? The object of a teacher is to educate, but it's not to educate on your political beliefs. It's to educate on what a school teacher is supposed to do.
Yes.
Inform them and then let them make their decision. Teach them math. Teach them
right.
grammar. Not teach some them facts. That they should be. That's exactly right. So and how to get to the answers, right, Seg? So to me, right. God bless Charlie Kirk and his family. And again, 2 kids are without their dad, and they always will be, which is a sad moment. But the spewing of hate. I can't remember a time when people in our own country seem to be fighting more now than they ever have. But I wasn't alive. I mean, obviously during the Martin Luther King and
yes.
during civil rights movement. I'm talking about this since I've been grown up. I can never remember a time when it felt like people. And I can't believe it's true that people in our country hate each other this much over a vote. Right. Is it really? I can't believe it. I can't believe that in any time in history, you want to take a 31-year-old guy out who's engaging with kind of encouraging dialogue, and then we're going to cheer that on from some. Boy, did TMZ try to pull off a fast one and try to let you believe they were talking about a car chase. If you saw that video, Sigs,
yeah.
Oh, goodness what gracious. But regardless, it just the nonsense, it's so gut wrenching to open up social media. It's awful.
Well, and it's just coming from all sides. It's coming from everywhere. I mean, the dumbest yes. thing I heard over the weekend was maybe one of the dumbest politicians we have in Nancy Pelosi, where she said, you know, she towed the company line of, oh, yes, all political violence is bad and all that stuff. And
then there's a but. There's always a but.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. There's always a but. And someone asked her about the rhetoric from the left that did it cause anything. And she said, oh, no. You know, we can't control what's in people's minds. So the rhetoric should have nothing to do with this because us as politicians is what she meant, that, you know, we can't control what people think after what we say, even though they've spent the last what, 10 years or so, just trashing Trump and his followers and other conservative politicians for their rhetoric towards, but yet it's okay if you call us that believe in Trump and are on the conservative side Nazis, or you call Trump Hitler multiple times.
Like, Segs, if you eat peanut butter and jelly, you're racist, right? If you, no matter what you do, if you disagree with somebody, it's a race related. That's what they've let you to believe. And you're exactly right. Well, the rhetoric, and you know what you'll see on these national shows with people saying, what did you just say?
Yeah.
They'd be like, hey man, you know, listen, nobody deserved to die like that. Then there's this, but the rhetoric he spewed. So basically you're peeing in my face and telling me it's raining. You're saying,
yes, 100%.
He didn't deserve to die, but man, because he spoke about, he didn't believe in, you know, abortion and wanted the border safe, that, well, that's negative rhetoric. I can't remember the last time that somebody wanting a child to live was negative rhetoric.
Right.
It became come to the point that if you're straight and want your country safe and you want less taxes, that you're a bad person, and that's spewing hateful rhetoric. Well, guess what? It's amazing when it only goes down one street. And there's plenty of Republicans and conservatives that are assholes too.
Yes, 100%.
There's plenty of them that they're baiting people to say something negative. There's no doubt. But I can tell you one thing. I've made a lot of stupid mistakes in my life, but I promise you this, one of them ain't going to be cheering on anybody's death unless it's somebody who's like, you can kill every single person involved with coming to our country and 9-1-1 and that 9-11 does that changed our country forever. You can take all them out. I'm talking about our people in our place, people that live here, innocent folks from any country, innocent folks, to be killing them and cheering that on. I got a problem with it.
Yep.
I got a problem with it. Charlie Kirk was an American, and Charlie Kirk also was a 31-year-old who didn't deserve to die, and to cheer it on makes you a scumbag. And I'm talking 100%. To whoever cheered it on. And I don't care what you think, because you can't get rid of me. Okay. That's been tried. Okay.
100%.
It's called the comeback trail. So I don't care what they say.
And to kind of bring this around to sports, it feels like, you know, and we need sports as a break. We need sports as a distraction. We need, you know, other stuff, movies, music as distractions, as long as it doesn't, you know, go in a certain way in terms of politically. But man, sports is just on this same, not the same wavelength, but it's damn near close where, you know, a guy can't do anything. A guy cannot make one mistake. Yes. Are there bad quarterbacks? Yes. Are there bad pitchers? Yes. But damn, if one guy makes one mistake, it's like, we're done with them. And that's the kind of country we've become with all this shit. It's just the world we live in right now where it's just, and it right now it's really, really bad in sports. I look at Twitter during games. Oh, Russell Wilson threw that pick. He's terrible. Oh, but then there's one guy. Well, he threw for 450 yards and however many touchdowns and had them, you know, in overtime against the Cowboys. So he's great. And then it turns into name calling. And it's just like, what are we doing? This is just sports. Enjoy what you're watching, and you could be a fan, but. And you can get upset with your team. You can get upset with a player, but everything doesn't have to be so goddamn personal.
Yeah, I've never understood it. I don't know where this started to happen. I really don't. This isn't a self-righteous, holier than thou shit. We're all guilty of it. We all get caught up in this, which we shouldn't, of the nonsense that goes on with, I'm just trying to turn my volume up. You guys know better than I do about this technology. With the nonsense that goes on, you're exactly right, Sakes. We've gotten, and it's not real life, but I'll tell you what, it's also as maddening and insufferable that sports has ever been too. I'm being honest. It's awful. You're trying to watch a game. It's a complete beatdown. And you get to a point where you're trying to do this and every day you're getting to the point, and social media has helped create this, and we've allowed it to where the likes and the ability to get paid are so tangible and so like you could cut it. It's right there in front of your face that I think people are saying stuff and doing stuff that like anger sells or nasty quotes or nasty where it feels like all the nasty, maybe that's the way it's always been, that the more negative you are, the more it sells. Yet I don't know why we can't just go on and be critical of somebody. And that doesn't mean you hate them. Say that this guy, and it's okay if you speak. Listen, I don't think Russ Wilson's going to have the job long. I stand corrected. I still think that he's not a great starting quarterback. He had a great game yesterday and single-handedly kept him in. And unfortunately, made a bad decision, a horrible throw that caught up to him, which has been a problem for him. But I'll tell you what, without him throwing like he did yesterday, they probably wouldn't have been in the game. So it was, and it's a bummer because he played pretty air-free football until the last part of it for them. And he did. And then the Cowboys have been questioned. They come down and win. But there's always a but at the end of it. I don't know why. Well, I got to cut him. Oh, this guy sucks. This guy's this coach. I mean, it's constant. And I understand all of our opinion, but when did we get to the point where you can be hardcore and in their face and eye-popping and wow, but you don't have to lose friends and hate somebody? And hell, sports now has become so combative that social media is no, for the most part, now depends on how you handle it. I just won't fight with them. I just got to the point, I ain't fighting with somebody on social media, wasting my time, especially when it's somebody who has no idea what steps you've taken to get where you're at. I'll banter in a good way, but it's so maddening now. It just, you watch the game, and you know what I'm thinking when I'm watching the game now? Oh, gosh.
Yep.
Wait till Trevor Lawrence and Liam Cohen get talked about on Monday. It's the end of his career. Liam Cohen's never going to coach again, and Trevor Lawrence is a bust because he waved off his coach. Like, get the now. There is something to that, but it doesn't mean their careers are both done. Okay, things could get fixed, but it's baffling to me. And that when you have an opinion, you're now getting killed for it, or vilified for it, or now it's just become a fist fight all the time. And I'll tell you what, I get why coaches leave the business. I wonder when broadcasters are just going to say, "Man, I've had it." To go on and ban, or just do your show and not engage with anybody, which I hate. That's why I hate. You can come on here and say you don't like Charlie Kirk. That's fine. But if you come on here and say you're rooting for his kids to be killed, that they'll get over it, then I have a bit of an issue with that because it just isn't – it's not sane, man. I guess we have become a sports nation and a society of insane when it used to be great banter. Matter of fact, the greatest thing I've ever learned is – through adversity or difference of opinion with somebody who I'm like, you know what? It's a great point. Not it's a great point, but you want to fight and break up, or you want to fight and quit being friends. I mean, losing 30-year friends over you support one and they don't, what? That means no, you were really friends in the first place. But I'm just not willing to do it. And it's maddening. It takes away from the pleasure of watching Saturday and Sunday sports because you damn well know the negative part's going to sell for most. And I like a hardcore opinion, and it's okay to be critical. But I don't hate Russ Wilson because he threw a pick at the end of a game. Saints.
Right.
I don't wish him and his family to have a miserable time. Okay. I just think that they're going to struggle all year long, and the Cowboys came through. I mean, you could go all up and down the league in college football too. I mean, Arch Manning, they're booing him now.
Yeah.
He and you know what? Some of his play deserves booed, which we'll get to. I get it. But you can't make a mistake in sports now. And I can't remember the last time any of us were perfect in our job, but it's become maddening. And at times there's people on there that make it insufferable to even go on social media.
Yeah. Social media is what makes it so hard. All right, let's get to the first big topic. I mean, to me, it was the biggest news in the NFL yesterday because we had a chance to be a very, very good football team. But when you look at this team last year, it's the exact same thing. And that's the Cincinnati Bengals losing Joe Burrow to the turf toe, to surgery. He's going to be gone minimum of 3 months, maybe out the year. Because if the Bengals aren't good, aren't in a spot to even try and compete for a playoff spot, there's no reason to hurry him back this season. And it just comes down to, first of all, a defense that isn't nearly good enough. And an offensive line that is downright putrid, maybe the worst in football year after year after year. And what happens? Joe Burrow gets hurt year after year after year after taking hits, and you just can't sustain it. We've seen great, some call generational quarterbacks that just cannot make it through their career without injury after injury. And the name I'm talking about is Andrew Luck. And it feels like that's the same situation. Now, does Joe walk away? I have no idea. He would be walking away from a lot of money. I'm talking in the next few years. But man, it just sucks for the NFL to lose this guy who is one of the top five quarterbacks in the league once again. And now the Bengals, who have Ja'Marr Chase and really good players, to me, even with Jake Browning, don't stand a chance to make the playoffs.
Oh, and he's a good backup, Sakes.
Good backup.
I don't know if he could. Yeah, he's a good guy to have because he keeps you in games, and I like his game. But I don't think he can sustain greatness at that position. I'm going to say this. Because as pure pocket passers go, and a guy who's got athleticism and toughness and smart, Joe Burrow's at the top of the list for guys in this league. I think he's a great player.
Yeah.
And he's got his IQ, football IQ, through the roof, all those things that have been well documented. I'm afraid, and now Trout's got more MVPs and all that, but you see the similarities. I'm afraid, Sags. And the one thing that Trout hasn't been, he's played in two playoff games, Mike Trout, and in our generation, Sags, I mean, in the last 15 years, you can make the argument over the course of time, nobody's been a better player. The problem is we haven't seen it. If Trout plays 120 to 130 games, then we consider that a big year for him. And yet his numbers will say it because that's how good he is. Love Mike Trout. But he played in two playoff games. At least Burrow got to a Super Bowl, but that offensive line and defense let them down in that as well. Think about this, that we're in danger of guys like that of missing out on the best part of a guy's career because he's not going to be healthy. And I'm afraid we're not going to see him reach his fullest potential because we say it about everybody else, and we have to say it about Burrow too, that the best availability, the cliche is availability. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, poor line play, expectations, wrong place, wrong time. It sucks because he's such a competitor and a great player that I'm not sure we're ever going to see. We're not going to see Mike Trout's not winning a World Series with the Angels, Sigs. He's just not. No. And now we're starting to get along in the career. He's saying, when will he get the chance as a star, not at 40 when he's not the same player, but a star to see him at his best on the biggest. We want to see Scottie Scheffler at Augusta. We want to see McIlroy. We want to know, are you a choke guy, or are you a guy that when the majors come up, you're playing your best golf? Same with in baseball or a pitcher. You want to be Andy Pettit. You want to be that Pedro that you when the postseason there, you're Jack Morris. You know, you're at your very best, right? Same thing with football. We want to see Mahomes in the Super Bowl. We want to see the best. We want to see what Lamar's like getting there. I'm not sure that you're going to see either, because as good as Burrow is, that defense and that offensive line, for an organization that continues, hell, they invest in some players. I mean, they're paying some, their top-notch players some good money. Something's missing. And again, if you don't build your offensive line first, that's why Philadelphia is going to keep winning. They built the interior of their defense, that front seven, and then they built their offensive line. And if you're not responding, if Zach's not going to get responses properly, as much, he's a good X's and O's guy, but if they're not going to respond and buy in, and the organization isn't going to start loading up there, then guess what they can do? Boom. They can just find themselves barely getting in or not getting in, and I don't think you're ever going to see them reach their fullest potential, because this is 3 months, Sig, so that gets them back with what? Two games, three games, four games to go? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
At that point in time, they won't be in the playoff hunt.
Right.
Sorry to tell you. They won't.
And then you
unless
don't.
Browning plays out of his mind.
Right. And then you don't rush Joe back. You just say, okay, you're going to take all offseason. We're going to try and get this right, because they're not going to be able to fix their offensive line. So when
you can't
back,
fix it during the season. Nobody's giving good offensive linemen away. They're just not doing it during the season.
You have to, you know, go into next offseason, and that just has to be your only thought, is offensive line. Like, you know, they say don't just focus on one thing, but the Bengals have to, because that is what's holding them back. Yes, their defense is trash. Yes, their defense is not good. They have some players, but as a whole unit, they are not good. But you can't even worry about that right now. You have to keep Joe Burrow as healthy as physically possible, because he is good enough to lead you to a Super Bowl.
He's proven
along
it.
With
He's
Jamar proven Chase it. And T. Higgins, and now Chase Brown in the backfield, who looks pretty well. I mean, it's just – it's tough. And I just – so you give them zero shot with Jake Brown to make
the playoffs. Oh, I know. I give him a chance. Because the reason why I give him a chance, Sags, to make the playoffs, Super Bowl, absolutely not. But the reason I give him a chance, Browning's – he's efficient enough. He's just limited on the things that Joe can do. The problem is I don't think you can just be efficient enough and have a defense and an offensive line like that and win. It was going to be tough enough on Burrow to do it. So can they – I mean, I started to look at the – we look at Miami. They're not very good. You start to look around the AFC and say, okay, this team, the Chargers, the Chiefs are – hell, the Chiefs now are in a chase mode, a big-time chase mode already. Denver has struggled right off the bat.
We'll see what
who are the Raiders?
Look like
Chargers, Raiders, Houston Texans. who were supposed to win their division. Now the Colts are 2-0 and kicking ass, and Daniel Jones looks like the MVP of the league right now. I mean, not you get my point. It's amazing what he's doing at a change up, at a change of venues and the way he's playing. So, Segs, no, I give them – put it this way. If you're saying, would I bet them to win a Super Bowl, I'll walk – I'll crawl 10 miles over broken glass if they win the Super Bowl this year without Burrow.
Right.
And then that's not going to happen. Now, people, I'm not crawling 10 miles over broken glass, but let's just say
that. That would be – that'd be hard on your knees and hands.
No doubt. No doubt.
All right. You mentioned it. Chiefs fall 0-2, lose to the Eagles yesterday in a game that – as I was watching, I was just kind of bored. I mean,
it was boring. First half sucked.
It was just a boring game. I just found myself like looking at my phone and be like, oh, yeah, the game's on. Like, you know, and I'm just, it was just one of those games that just never got going. We had what? I think it was 8 tush pushes in this game. And I'm sorry. I love the fact that they found something that they are much better at than anybody else in the league.
And you wonder why people can't emulate it. It's the weirdest thing.
I do wonder, and I like that they have that, but yesterday was just, it showed why it cannot be in the NFL. Because they're going off sides, and you can't see it as a ref. Well, maybe you can, and they're just not calling it. But, I mean, the center's lined up over top the ball. His head's past the ball, so he's lining up off sides. Then you have the guard shooting before the ball even moves. And there's no penalties, and they did it almost every single time.
And if there's a fumble, you can't see it in the pile, so they're just going to give anything. It to the team unless it flies out of the pile, right?
And now they've been so good at it that the officials just almost assume they get the first down. Like, they never get stopped, and it's because if you're official, you just assume they get it because they are so good at it.
It's like Tony Gwynn taking a strike. If he doesn't swing at it when he was playing, if Tony didn't swing at it, the umpire, it's got to be a ball. Yeah. Shit, Gwynn's not swinging it. I'm not risking a call to strike here because the guy's got the best eye in the world. It's the same thing. Listen, it's a boring, methodical. Even Dean Blandino yesterday goes, I'm over this push thing. And he's the rules. He goes, I'm over. Basically saying, enough's enough on the one they thought they fumbled. And
you could just hear in his voice, he's like, I'm sick of talking about this damn play. Like,
yes, get rid of it. Done with it. Right. But they dominate it. And so right now it'd be like, well, if you guys hate it so much, run it yourself or stop us. So, but it was even boring on their side. They were, Jalen Hurts played methodical and efficient. They ran the ball well enough to win. They didn't really do anything great other than play damn good defense again. Right. And then, you know, Fangio and Spagnuolo, both the two of the best we have on the planet, but it was boring. But I'd rather be Philly with a boring win than I would a Kansas City Chiefs team. I said last week, Segs, I just don't think the Chiefs are that good offensively. I just don't. Everything, they play sideways a lot of times. Mahomes' legs kept him alive on some things. Catches that normally Travis Kelce has in the past were laid on the ground yesterday. For what it was, just wasn't his day. Now he makes a great play on the one catch, and then he's holding out like a loaf of bread, making extra. He's still got that ability. But the simple things that they're so used to doing, they don't. And their weapons, I know without – well, with Worthy and Rice not there, but I'm not even sure with those two back that you're like fearful of the Chiefs offense. I know it makes them better. Anytime you lose two studs at wide receiver, I get it. But Segs, I've got no fear other than when Mahomes is doing something crazy. They don't scare me as much as they have if I'm a defense in the past.
No.
I their offense, once again, their defense is going to have to carry them again to get them where they want to go, because who knows? And if somebody gets healthy, who knows if somebody has a hammy or something else? I think the Kansas City Chiefs, with nothing but respect for my favorite guy, Andy Reid, and for Mahomes' credit and how good Kelsey's been, but personnel or not, they're just not the same. They don't scare you. They got to play a lot of sideways, bubble screen, short stuff football, because it feels like they either can't get separation or they can't hold the ball long enough, which is odd to me. I thought it was a really, really weird game. The better team won, and the better team's the Philadelphia Eagles, and they've proven it twice now in the last three games.
Yeah, they should get Xavier Worthy back, hopefully, this week. We'll see.
His ability to take the top off helps, no doubt.
Yes, it does help. Free up people. And then, so you have your 0-2. You have at the Giants, which a game they can win. Then they play the Ravens, which right now, the way they're playing,
they're going to get boat raced. Yes.
They're going to get boat raced. At least it's an Arrowhead. Then they go to the Jags, which I don't know what that is. That's a Monday night game. And then you have the Lions, who looked really good yesterday. So, and then you get Rashee Rice back. Then hopefully everybody's healthy. And then we can see what that offense looks like with the two big guns and Worthy and Rice back together.
And if Dr. J said, if all of a sudden they, if Miami really is going to trade Tyreek Hill, would he go back? Because remember, we know now, depending on what's going on with the court and arrested and all that stuff that he's got pending with, what was it, domestic violence charges? Mm-hmm. Is that what it is, Segs?
Yeah.
Is, who the biggest second chance giver in all of sports is? It's Andy Reid. I mean, you look over the course, he gave it, well, Tyreek coming out to Kareem Hunt. He's done, he's given chances a lot, and Andy believes in that, the rehab part of it. But yeah, getting Tyreek Hill would help. But right now, offensively, you squeeze one or two guys, and as long as Mahomes isn't killing you throwing the ball, they're not a lot of separation. They're not, they don't scare anybody right now.
Yeah, it's just, it's tough to watch. It's just, it's tough. I talked about the Lions. They looked really good yesterday. Back to what we saw from them. Now, I hate to say it, this is a Bears team that's just not good. They're just, I don't know what it is. Dennis Allen has taken this defense that was solid last year under Matt Eberflus, and they couldn't stop anybody yesterday. They have zero pass rush, and the Lions took advantage of it, and they scored multiple times in a row. And if that's the kind of defense or offense you get from the Lions, even without Ben Johnson, getting back Aiden Hutchinson and some other pieces of that defense is going to be a lot better than they were last year. And they can really compete with a team like Philly in the NFC and Green Bay in the NFC.
Think about how the narrative shifted in 1 week. Think about last week to this week, how it's changed literally damn near overnight. When you think about how in a close one last week, they end up losing it late and everybody's tripping. That was Minnesota, right? Yeah, it was a Minnesota game, correct?
Yeah.
Right. Last week it was Minnesota beat Chicago, correct?
Yes.
I mean, Detroit. No, Minnesota beat Chicago. Yes. Green Bay, Detroit, but Minnesota beat Chicago.
Yes.
And just how the narrative surrounding the teams and with Detroit is their loss where they looked like they couldn't move and they were dominated by the Packers. I got Ben Johnson because of his success against Brian Flores. That's the Chicago Minnesota thing, but the Green Bay dominated them. And you're saying, well, these are the two best teams in division. Sure doesn't look like Detroit's one of the better teams in division, and everybody's tripping over Ben Johnson being gone. What's going to happen? Well, they get a little movement, they get a little momentum, they run the football better, their offensive line gets back to done, because we always give all the credit to Philly as the best offensive line in the league, but Detroit's been one of the best in the league for the last two or three years.
They're pretty good.
If not longer. So them going out and sending a loud message. Now, Chicago's got some work to do, Segs. I feel like they're playing two different games they played. I feel like they start and get going, and Caleb gets into a rhythm. And some of the throws he made early in the game, Segs, outcut to his left on time. I mean, and then remember what I said about hero ball, the scramble to the right and throw, instead of throwing it away, just throws one up and it gets picked, which leads to trouble. Right. I'm still having a hard time. I know how gifted he is, because he is. If you tell me he's not talented, then you're not watching. The guy is extremely talented, but there's something missing, Segs, from, it's almost like at times during a game, I feel like he checks out. Does that make sense? I want to be wrong, but I just feel like smirking on the side. Like, I want to know, does he love this?
Right.
Does he love playing football, or is it part of the routine and act and getting paid? I mean, would he play if he wasn't getting paid? I know that you could say that about everybody. You get my point, though, right?
Yeah.
I believe certain guys, like yesterday, Scottie Scheffler is playing in this. What does he got to prove this year, Segs? It's an event. Right. They're kind of tuning up for the Ryder Cup. He said, fuck the tune-up. I'm going to win the thing.
Yeah.
And he didn't go there to tune up. He went up there to bury you. And I don't even think Scottie Scheffler probably knew what the winner's check was going into the tournament. No. Honest to God. And it's the same thing. As much as I like Caleb, I'm trying not to buy into the nails and all this stuff. But is there a leadership? Is Ben Johnson, are they going to be able to coexist where it's done? They're constantly on the same page. But the hero ball again, Segs, that's going to get him in trouble. And he did it again. Because when he's just making plays and throwing on time and using his feet when necessary, the guy's a dynamic skill set. But there's always a lull in the game. Last year it happened, and now with a new coordinator, that I wonder, does he care? And I know that's not fair because I got to believe he cares, but something's missing from the talent to the result that I don't like. And I know it's still two games in, but that's a hell of a, there's a lot of guys that would like that gift. And I just don't know what I'm going to get from him every week on consistency. And can he play four quarters of great football in a row?
Yeah, and that's just what we're going to kind of have to wait and see if Ben Johnson can coach that into him as it goes throughout the year.
Without coaching out a skill set, Stegs, without the ability, you want to coach that out of it.
Yes, because, I mean, yeah, you bring up that throw that he threw the pick on, that he overthrew Zacchaeus, and then they're at third and 34 because, and this is part of his problem yesterday, in my opinion, the offensive line was garbage. Penalty after penalty after penalty put him behind the sticks. So he felt like he, and then of course, on top of it, the defense isn't stopping Detroit at all. So now he's thinking, oh, well, I got to try and turn this into a shootout at least. So now I am going to have to try and make some throws. But they were at third and 34. Third and 34. Most of the time it's just a draw, right? Or it's just a screen. That's all you're calling, just to
get out of the set, to get out and flip the yards and the field will punt. Yes, right.
Exactly. But he scrambles out because he's immediately pressured and he makes a throw that was a hero ball throw. He threw it 32 yards because Rome Odunze was about 2 yards short, and he threw it over three defenders right into Rome's hands, and then Rome drops it. So it's like, and that's where you kind of got to look at, you can live with some of the hero ball, even the mistakes, if it's 60 to 70% of the time he does that hero shit, that it works.
Right. And they're winning the games instead of losing them, Sigs. Yes. That's another thing. He's just one of those guys. It's like if a guy strikes out twice in a game, but homers and doubles, I don't give a really rat's ass about the strikeouts. You get my point? Right. And you're winning. Right. It's hypersensitive when you're losing, because then we go say, oh, look, Russ Wilson. People wanted to replace him last week, and I'm one of them. Say, at some point, you're going to need a new energy. He played with a different energy yesterday, and he played his ass off. But one throw and a couple decisions late in the game are going to have people saying, man, it's time to get rid of him. You know, Now, I thought he played well enough yesterday to say, hell, he never done that. But he's starting next week, right?
Yeah, he didn't have any of the really bad misses, you know, like we saw in week one.
Until the last one of a stupid decision.
Right. Yes.
Yes, 100%. So Seth, when I look at that.
That was the bad throw.
Right. And I look at Caleb Williams, I'm thinking, the ability, and here's the problem, Segs, when you know you can make the throws that he made to Rome and he dropped it, then you know what you do the next time? You're going to try it again.
Yeah.
And I don't want to coach it out of him, but I do got to coach it temperate a little bit, right? Just, dude, we don't have to jump off the cliff every time without a parachute. It's okay. Sometimes you'll land in the water. Sometimes you'll belly flop in the water. You know what I'm saying? You'll go all Harrison Ford in the movie where you jump off and jump down a waterfall and survive it, and they can't catch you, and you get to tell your story, right? So with Tommy Lee Jones. So with this, I'm trying to – and to a great point, Texan Spirati, he's a very talented for sure. One of the more gifted players we have in leagues, Caleb Williams. But the more it goes on, the more we're going to question, does he have – playing quarterback and being a thrower and an athlete is different than playing quarterback and being a winner and having the intangibles that will you to victory. Sags, he's going to beat somebody by throwing for 390 this year and running for 65, and it's going to be great. And then he's going to lose making some silly decisions, and we're going to question, well, look at his body language. I try to guard against body language because I think it's overrated at times. Mm-hmm. But it's not overrated when you're not winning. You know what I mean? So the question is, does he have the intangibles? I think you can argue right now the answer is no. But I don't think it's fair with another new coordinator until we see this one through. I think you'll get an idea, because Ben Johnson expects – there's going to be, if this continues, still stupid mistakes during a game. Ben Johnson's head's going to explode at some point in time.
Yes.
Yet he also realizes – that the talent that guy has, you can't sit him down right now, although he's got to give you the best chance to win by making better decisions. And thank you, I mean, Amench 5045. We appreciate the compliment.
I saw an analyst, I don't even remember which one it was, but blame Caleb Williams for one of the plays where he escaped a sack by Aiden Hutchinson basically rolled Baxton Jones right back into Caleb. And Caleb jumped like he was in his stance and jumped 2 feet forward, about a yard and a half, to avoid Aiden Hutchinson and then escaped out of the pocket and wasn't able to make a throw to complete a pass. I think he threw it away, if I'm not mistaken. And they were blaming Caleb Williams for not just taking the sack. I'm just like, this is where I get frustrated with just the stupidity that we see from these guys trying to make hot takes. It's like, so this guy can make a great play to avoid a sack, but now it's his fault that he avoided it. He should have just taken the sack and lived with the 6-yard loss. Like, no, he escaped and threw it away or whatever. Maybe even completed. I can't remember exactly, but it's just like, how are we blaming this on Caleb when the left tackle is being drove into him within a second and a half?
Because it's fashionable, Segs. It's the thing to do. It goes back to the anger and that position invokes on people. You know what? I'll tell you when you can take a sack. When you're at the 20-yard line and you've got Aubrey kicking for you and you're Dallas and you drop back on second down and it's late in the game and all you need is a field goal. And instead of throwing it and risking a tip ball, you take the sack at the 30 and the guy's kicking a 48-yard field goal. Right. Or taking the sack. Now if you're at the 40 and you take a sack to the 50, then you're an idiot. Throw the ball out of bounds. But you don't need to play hero ball. There's a time and a place where a sack is the best play because you got – a 70-yard field goal kicker in your back pocket that's like automatic from 60, right? So, but I can't sometimes listen with the sound downs better off. But that being said, I just the frustration that I'm sure that Chicago fans feel because they've got some good players, Sakes. And you know what you're going to start to hear in Chicago, Sakes, because I know you that you're with your Bears following. Is you're going to start to hear if this continues. I hate to say it because it's not going to happen.
Right.
But you know that backup that's pretty good on your team. Tell me they haven't called for him at times already. Oh,
they already do. They've been calling for him since he was. Since
I love Williams the kid. He's a competitive. I love the kid, but Caleb Williams is
he's Jake Browning. 3 years at most.
Yes. Right now, if he has to start every Padgett, I mean, he's a good player, but. Badgett, I mean, what did I say? Yeah. Badgett? No, Badgett. Yeah. And I love his story and how tough and competitive he is. Yeah. But you're going to see the Caleb Williams thing through because an organization never wants to admit it made a mistake with the first pick of the draft. And right now, he's got – I'd rather have him play boring football six for 4 quarters than exciting for 2.5. Yeah. That's what I'm asking from Caleb Williams.
And that's where it's going to be interesting to see if Dennis Allen can get this defense playing. And now today we found out that Jalen Johnson's going to be out – for an extended period of time,
which
we don't
crushes
know how long.
Them because he's so freaking good, man.
And so it's going to be tough for Dennis Allen, but you need him to keep the Bears in game so Caleb doesn't feel like he has to throw them back into games if they get down early to Dallas next week, with Dak. And because without Jalen Johnson, how do you slow down Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Pickens? And others, it's like how does
they
work?
Look like an offense yesterday, didn't they? Sings they ran physical too,
right? Yeah, Javonte Williams played right through 2 weeks.
I like this style. I'm with you, buddy. I'm with you.
All right, let's jump to Saturday night. Notre Dame loses the game, and there's multiple reasons they lost the game, but the extra point to go up 41-34, perfect snap. You've held before in your career, and it just hit his hand, and he just didn't finish the catch. How bad did you feel for Buckner in that spot? And this is where it's also kind of the negativity plays, even in TV, because they showed him 17 times leading up to them losing that game to Texas A&M. Notre Dame's 0-2. Man, is it going to be tough for them to make the playoff?
You're not kidding. Yeah, I felt just thanks. I mean, who does? Because he's going to see the picture of that and the video
over and over
again. I'm going to tell you though, I was shocked at how many points were scored in the game.
I was too.
Considering both defenses. If you'd have told me 21-17, 23-20, I'm all in. I was shocked at how easy the offenses made it look. A&M off to a really good start this year. I can assure you that Elko does not want to give up that kind of points, but he'll take the win any way he can get it, especially when you're playing a team that was just is just a year removed from being in the final. 41-40. both lost, what's that, 4 points difference in two losses against two good teams that are playoff hopefuls, Miami. And you know what? Kudos to Carson Beck, because I've challenged him, Segs, and questioned what was he going to be like. He's gotten to a rhythm. Even though he threw picks, he's really playing really good football. And C.J. Carr, to answer your question, a hell of a career ahead of him, as does Ty Simpson in Alabama. Those two young fellas are playing some really, really friggin' good football. And William, yes, I played the position for Burrow. I don't know. Turf toe, I've had it. It is miserable. It is absolutely miserable. And plus, they're going to have surgery. So that isn't a pain tolerance thing. That's a structural issue. Because the one thing I won't question about Burrow is he pain tolerant tough? He is. Now, if he said, well, gosh, he's got a hangnail in there, an ingrown toenail, you take a shot in or whatever you got to do, take it, go. But when you're requiring surgery from that toe and you're going to be out 3 months, that's not the pain tolerance. That's something far different. But thanks, kudos to – it's going to be very difficult for Notre Dame. You get to three losses, and there may be a loss there. I don't see how you make it, even though you're Notre Dame. I don't think they can – because their schedule is not that challenging. It really isn't. They do not have a challenging schedule. Right. They've had two teams that if you win one of them, well, good. But they've had two losses, even though close ones, against two playoff caliber teams. And then you still got a rising Southern Cal team, right? I mean, when do they play, Segs?
They play
November is always like
– Nope, the 18th of October.
October, and that'll be in South Bend this year. So, you know, you have the schedule is favorable to them. And you look around the country how disruptive was South Carolina quarterback. They lose Lenora Sellers, gets hurt, you know, with his situation. And then you start to look at how Tennessee played, and, oh, my gosh – Played excellent football, and your field goal kicker lets you down. I hate playing. I just can't do it, Segs. I can't play for if somebody's not been in a game-winning kicking situation. And you know, I felt Tennessee's fans when I was watching their expression, dude. I felt talking about feeling a gut wrenching for them. Now I understand if you're the opposing team, meaning Georgia, you don't give a rat's ass about it. But they kind of did what Tennessee done. They left a victory on the table against a hell of a Georgia team that is physical, but Kirby even said it. He said Tennessee may have deserved to win the game. He said, I thought they outplayed him, but his kids were resilient, didn't quit. A lot going on in college football, not the least of which Arch Manning struggling too, Segs. But back to your point about the Notre Dame thing, it's going to be very difficult to run the table, not schedule-wise. They should. They could beat SC too at home. I mean, they could run the table, but lose one more, and Notre Dame's not making the 12 this year, and you and I both know that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about Arch Manning, because we talked about the Ohio State game where he looked really, really bad at times in terms of the mechanics of playing the position. We saw it again. And I know you can't change mechanics in a week, but man, he just has that thing where he just kind of forgets. It feels like he forgets everything mechanically and just tries to whip a ball, and it just never works for him right now. We see some guys that can do that. He's not one of them at this moment, and maybe he can get to that, but it's tough, you know, watching him play right now, especially with all the expectations of everybody had him as the number one or two pick in this upcoming draft. I mean, there's a much, much, much better chance that he's going to be the quarterback for Texas next year than it is that he'll be on an NFL team next year.
Judging from three starts, he should have no desire to go play in the NFL because he ain't ready. Right.
Not ready at all.
As much as I love him and the Manning family, Segs, I'm going to tell you, and by the way, I'm with you, Dr. J, Texas is going to get awarded for an unimpressive victory against UTEP, and Notre Dame's going to get penalized for losing to two good teams. Yeah, I think strength of loss is also something that comes into play. That's just me. It bothers me a little too. That's for another conversation as we get closer to the playoff. Segs, I'm just telling you now, he's got major mechanical problems, Arch Manning does. Shockingly. Mm-hmm. His feet are rarely in great position. And his arm angle, he's throwing as if he's got an injury to his shoulder. I'm just telling you, he is. Listen, there's very few that can live three quarters or sidearm down here and be accurate consistently. The guy in with the Rams from Detroit, now the Rams, Stafford's one of them. Very few. Off schedule, Mahomes throwing those bubble screen sidearm. I'm talking about the continue every play, even in clean pockets that I mentioned. If his feet and arm are in a slot, Segs, that he's got to do something extra special to have the ball accurate. I'm telling you. And in all three games, there's been times against two really inferior opponents. And then you saw the throws he missed at Ohio State. There has been times early in these starts and throughout the game in all three of them, even the one he threw four touchdowns in 5 minutes last week. There is something going on in every game where you watch him throw and you say, there's no way his last name's Manning throwing the football like this.
Right.
And mechanically, it's got to get fixed because, man, you know, but then again, Siggs, right now, the people who said, no, he's never going to be a player in the league are they're rejoicing. I'm not rejoicing for it because I'm not going to rejoice if it was anybody, even if it's somebody playing my Trojans. I want him to have a bad game that day, but I don't want to see these guys suffer. I mean, you watch what Carson Beck went through at Georgia and revitalized his career. Arch Manning. Now, Segs, I don't know how anybody lives up to the hype and stays focused on the game considering what he's got to live up to, because even if he throws for 240 or 200 or 360 or 400, if there's a pick or a bad play in there, they get beat by a good team, it's going to be his fault. Which is now impeded, and Sark doesn't look like he's calling his most confident games because the quarterback hasn't responded. They're not a top 10 team, top 10 talent. Their defense is nasty. We know their defense is nasty. But I'm going to tell you right now, the mechanics, just the visual I'm getting from it, and I don't watch their games the way that you'd watch as a fan. I watch them like I'm trying to watch everything he does and say, okay, how can we improve this, and what am I seeing? And Sags, that team right now, because the way the offense, the lack of flow in the offense, and unfortunately the way he's playing right now, I can name 15 teams in a league in a country that are better than them right now, playing better, more than that. Now, when all's said and done, do they get it fixed and they get a little momentum and he picks it up? Yes, but accuracy is so important. And you just can't keep having these moments and these lapses of bad mechanics, because you're going to start running into, again, a tougher part of the schedule after this next one they have. And then it gets hard. And Ohio State ain't the only team that's going to do this.
Right.
I'm telling you, three games isn't enough for a body working two against lesser opponents.
Right.
But there feels like a lack of confidence. There's bad mechanics. There's believability. There's a lot going on that you're saying, man, put it this way. If his name wasn't Arch Manning right now, Segs, you would consider giving the quarterback behind him time. And it's not going to happen. I get it. You don't want to open that can of worms, but damn, when are you going to? You better spread your wings pretty soon here and get this figured out, because guess who ain't going to care? SEC schedule.
Right.
They're not playing like a top 10 team, let alone the team that was ranked at the top of the country when the season started.
It's just one of these things where, you know, you just mentioned the name on the back of the jersey, Manning. We've seen it. James, LeBron's kid, Bronny, struggle, gets drafted when he only averaged, 3 or 4 points a game at USC. Struggled. Was put in the NBA just to have that moment. You can tell me anything you want to tell me. We know 100%. They just wanted that moment of him and his son checking into the game together that opening night. That's all that was for, was that clickbait material. And the NBA, no one can ever convince me otherwise, because he was not NBA ready. He was not draft worthy. And I think he's shown that he was not draft worthy that year. Shedeur Sanders, he played good at Colorado, but he never beat anybody really good. He never advanced them further, playing under his dad, Deion, with the Buffaloes. And then he goes in and he's a fifth round pick. It is tough for these kids to live up to the hype. Now, yes, Shedeur made it harder on himself by all the dumb shit he said over the last few years, by, you know, having all the cars, having everything, that, you know, wearing the watches on he made it a lot harder on himself.
Well, he made it easy to criticize if you were not having success.
Yes. Yeah. Bronny and Arch don't seem to do that. They keep their head down. They're just grinding away at what they, their craft, if it's basketball or football. But it's got to be tough for these kids knowing what's on their back. I mean, I remember Michael Jordan's kid playing at Illinois, and he was not very good. He ended up at UCF with his brother, who also played basketball down there, and neither one of them were very good basketball players, but they got an opportunity to play college basketball because their name. And it's tough when you're a kid or a nephew or a family member of some of the greatest we've ever seen in that particular sport.
Elway and Montana both had quarterbacks as sons, and neither one of them really ever finished. Right. I mean, they did. Imagine those expectations. Are you kidding me? Just like you mentioned LeBron, and just like you mentioned Manning. In Eli's case,
Brady's kid is a quarterback growing up.
You really got – I don't know how you – I mean, you got a chance, but the expectations we placed on them before we even know what they can do, because you saw them play high school football in Louisiana – We're so into parlaying out the potential, we forget the production and letting the kid grow into a position. We don't allow that anymore at any level.
No.
It's amazing to me, Sags, because have we ever thought, and I'm not jumping in, this question's going to be asked. I'm not ready there. Now, Tigers kid, yeah, but that's an individual sport that relies only on you. And I think there is a difference there because you can be, you're not relying on a guy catching in a certain system. You know your system. It's the guy that's coaching you. His name's Tiger, knows how to get your club to square up. So I think it's a little different, but
we're not having millions of people watch Tiger's son week in and week out,
right,
learn his golf game as he's going, like we are Arch and Brian.
Where everybody else, if that guy doesn't play well, then he loses. In football, if you don't play well, a whole organization suffers, or in baseball, if you don't pitch well or whatever. So, but it is, I'm sure his grind is different, and Tiger is, but we also have to understand that not every one of these kids is built the same as their pops, or as built like the other
guy. Uncle or whatever.
There will come a time, if this doesn't pick up, where we're going to say, unless it changes, was it fair to label Arch Manning who Eli and Peyton were? And the answer right now is no. It's not fair anyway, but it's part and parcel of being a big name. You know, it happens. It happens in Hollywood. It happens in sports. It happens in music. It happens all over the place. The expectations placed on. Listen, Segs, I'm wondering if he has one monster game against a good team. Does that kickstart him, right? But if this continues where it's just an offensive struggle, and quite frankly, a lot of their struggle is because of the way he's throwing the football. If that continues to happen, you're going to be faced with some decisions. We're not there yet, but there's already people across the country that are saying it. Arch has got to play better if the Texans going to get there. I believe in him, but I also don't think you should have a problem with anybody criticizing his first three starts. They have not been good. So whether it's confidence, for me, the mechanical flaws are blatant, and they got to be fixed.
Yeah, you wonder how fast, because it doesn't seem like, from even on a Twitter standpoint, that we're seeing people calling for his benching or anything like that, but is another loss to and I'd have to pull up their schedule to see exactly what they got coming up. But once they get into that SEC schedule, if they play in Alabama or Georgia or Tennessee or whoever, if they lose that game, and let's say they lose it by two touchdowns and he has a rough game, that is going to get loud as can be.
Oh, yes.
When it comes to Arch Manning being benched.
And then Sark's going to be faced with it. Well, he didn't transfer. He's here. You stick with him. He's loyal to you. You're going to be – he's going to face all those things. But even the wealthy alumni that love the Mannings, you know how that goes, man. You know how that goes. And before you know it, it's a great point. The Sooners – now, right now, the Sooners are a better football team than the Longhorns are.
Yes.
Because their quarterback right now is playing far better. And that Red River shootout – they call it the rivalry. It's still a shootout to me.
Yeah.
Is coming, and it's going to be here sooner than you know it. So I pull for these kids that are going through all this. Then you think about how someone like, look what Vanderbilt did again. I mean, it's been impressive to see some of the great stuff, but we're not shy on criticism, and which gets me back to the NFL real quick, Segs, just to validate what you saw with Trevor Lawrence. And by the way, I'm hoping Arch pulls out of this, but you know what? He's not above criticism, we said, and he has not played well. That Trevor Lawrence, Liam Cohen thing, here's what I don't like. I felt like Cohen, listen, you try not to embarrass your quarterback, but we also got to toughen up with the stuff. If it's criticism, he's your subordinate. You don't do what you did. I thought it was disrespectful to wait to blow him. He didn't wave him off like, okay, I got it. He was like, don't fucking talk to me.
Yeah.
That I already think that Trevor Lawrence has got a long way to go before. I mean, he's not a bust, but he's not the first pick of the draft. If you redrafted, he wouldn't be in the top 10. You drafted him, all that potential. But there's speak about something missing. Something is missing. They're not a great franchise either. They're just not. Something's always missing from there, unfortunately, from them. But I know the fans expect something. Lawrence was drafted, but you see this. Now, I don't know what Cohen was saying to him as a first-year head coach, but one is when you do that to a quarterback, it's like, can't you get over to the sidelines and then cuss him out and do it that where it's like when somebody throws their arms up when you throw an incomplete, it's like, man, don't do that. We'll have the conversation over here. And on the other side, regardless of what the coach does to you as a quarterback, well, I think we're making a huge deal. People fight and argue all the time on the sidelines. But when a camera catches it and he blows them up, I can't imagine Brady doing that to Belichick. They may MF each other on the sideline.
Right.
There's a certain respect that I think, even though Liam Cohen's got a long way to go to earn it, to get buy-in, Trevor Lawrence is his quarterback. And if your coach is cussing you or doing that, guess what? Nod your head, get your ass back in the huddle, and then go deal with him on the sidelines and say it. I saw Bo Nix and Sean Payton get into it on the sideline.
Yep.
He walked by him, and Sean Payton basically chased his ass down. Bo Nix turned around. They got into a heated discussion, went about their way. We'll see how it goes from there. Some coaches actually like that contention. They like to go, so they want to know what kind of fire's in your belly.
Right.
But the optics said disrespect both ways at Jacksonville. The question is, did they handle it afterwards? And did the coach call him in and say, we're not doing that and I shouldn't have done it? Or how did they handle it? Or are they just going to let it go because, well, it's competition, it's heat of battle? The optics look bad because of the way Lawrence responded and how emphatic Liam Cohen was. That can fester into something really bad if you don't get it taken care of immediately.
And this takes me one point, and then we'll wrap up the show. And we got plenty to talk about tomorrow with more NFL games, more situations.
All, right? Yeah, and we're sorry.
Can't do it all one day.
Technology, yep.
But we've talked about Trevor Lawrence. We've talked about Caleb Williams. We've talked about Arch Manning. We've talked about, you know, and I'm more focusing on the top picks in the NFL draft at the quarterback position. CJ Stroud had a rough second year. How is he going to bounce back this year? How much of it do you put on organizations as a whole? How much do you put it on coaching? And then how much do you put it on player in terms of when we look at Caleb Williams struggling, we look at Trevor Lawrence struggling, we look at Bryce Young struggling, CJ Stroud, I mentioned the second rough year. And I can go on and on with other players. Drake May struggling a little bit, but also makes some good throws. Jaden Daniels had a great first year. This year started off a little bit slower than I think even Washington fans would like to admit. But there's so many quarterbacks taken in the top 10, top 15 picks. Even go back to Mahomes was, what, the 10th pick, 11th pick, whatever it was. And then Deshaun Watson was right behind him with Trubisky at the top. We've seen Justin Fields. I think with the Bears, we know that's an organizational thing. But that these guys are just not firing on all cylinders when it comes to, because we all know they have the talent or they wouldn't be top round picks. So how much, when you look at it from an organization to coaching to the player, how would you kind of pie that out if you were talking it in that direction?
I think that at times an organization saying, well, they can bury you by not putting good players around you. Ask Joe Burrow.
Right.
Joe Burrow. That's from the organization. Example. How are you building this team around your key players, the proper pieces? That's where the organization, who the general manager is drafting, I'm putting him in the organizational part of it. Are you supplying them with players that everybody else knew? One thing we got to guard against at times is giving all these people who draft and organizations credit for always being experts. If that was the case, they'd never miss. They miss. We all miss, and they miss. The problem is when it's a quarterback, it's heightened. It sets your franchise back. A defensive tackle I can miss on. A linebacker I can miss on. Matter of fact, a lot of times the fourth-round pick at linebacker, because he's hungrier, is better than the first-round pick. Happens all the time. But the quarterback position is so dependent. Well, sports football is now dependent on the quarterback position, but in turn, you can see no matter how good they are, Burrow, Mahomes, no matter how good you are, that if you can't play it upright regularly, you are in trouble. And when you're not doing, or defense doesn't get stops, or and then you're more pressure on you to score more, you are in trouble. So that's for the organization. It falls to me, Segs, on the next two, on the coaching and development and on the player. Now, I have never once gone into a game. Now, you wanted to win for the organization, but you know at no time in playing a game or being around people when the game started, have I ever thought, man, I want to do this for the. I want to do it for the fans. I want to do it for your teammates. The organization is just the ones. It's like I want to win for them because that's my organization, that's my team. But you get my point. You're not thinking about them, but you are taking into account coaching and who they got in front of you and what kind of plays you're making. I do, and I think we give so-called guys that have been in it or experts sometimes they miss and sometimes they don't teach it as well. Just because you're a teacher doesn't mean you're a good one. I mean, check our education system out. Just because you're a teacher, just because you're a coach doesn't mean that you know how to reach the four different bodies in a quarterback room or three or eight different receiver room or defensive line. The ability, that's why I always go back to buy-in. Listen, I care more about buy-in than I do liking any coach. And when you get in there and you can get each guy to buy into whatever his strength is, then you're good. So I do coaching. If people who don't think coaching matters are out of their friggin' mind. People can coach good out of you and people can coach good in you. Unfortunately, that we don't have we don't see enough of it. Why? Because during the season, we're game plan heavy. We are not individual mechanics. And that's why it's so incumbent upon them, the players, to get their work in and all the little things that allow you to react as opposed to overthink on Sundays. And I see some of these guys, I think Arch Manning's going through it. I think he's having a hard time going through the expectations and trying to live up to it, trying to get in the process. The simple things of mechanics and doing it right have eluded him in the first three games that hopefully he can get back. So it comes down to me, Segs, and I hate to say it, and I'll say it again, but I hate to say this because I do think coaching gets in the way. Play calling and the rest of it. That's why you got to spend time with them and get on the same page so you know what you're good at. But for me, at no time in my life am I ever going to blame a coach for a bad decision by me. I'm just not. Now, Segs, if I'm playing with a coach and he says throw a hitch into cover two, then the coach has got to go. Then he's just teaching bad football. I would hope that somebody's not that dumb to teach that. But I get right into what lonely, and I know it goes, we hear this and it's kind of cliche, but the lonely work, the players around you, are you bought in? I don't know. Does Trevor Lawrence buy into Liam Cohen right now? Or even though we assume, the Chicago Bears are getting a great play caller and a great head coach, we don't know what kind of head coach he's going to be, but are he and Caleb on the same page? Or how are they going into rooms? Is he? You get my point? So yeah. The development, I think our expectations are absurd. In normal football, the guy's not ready. Even so, sometimes somebody comes in and plays good football. As a rookie, sometimes it's a little bit get a beginner's luck because you don't even know really what you're doing. You're just reacting. And that's the truth. Matter of fact, it's the same. Think about it a second. I'll just use this in my golf comparison. And I don't mean this that I'm a great golfer. I'm getting better. And I can play. I can compete and have fun with good golfers because at least I can compete, right? But when I first started golfing, honest to God truth, and this is how I apply it to quarterbacks in some situations or players. I was a great putter, not a good one. I was a great putter. Because you know what I did? I walk up, I look at the green and the slope. And I say, it kind of reminds me of a quarterback. When somebody right now still to this day says, puts a football in your hand or you go stand, I don't even need a rangefinder. And I'm at like 70 yards. I'm going to tell you, without a rangefinder, between 70 and 80, within a yard or two, would it look just with the naked eye? Because you can kind of get a feel for it, right? But I was a great putter. Because I just look at it and get a feel and thought, okay, the problem is it took me too many strokes to get to the putt where I could make it.
Right.
Now, you know what I did when I realized I could putt? Didn't work on it very much. I just got a great feel for it. And what do you do? I read Golf Digest. I turned on the TV. I read it all. And 18 different people have 18 different putters and a mallet putter, the blade putter, and different tall or shorter. Do you bend down? Do you flex your legs? And then I started reading Golf Digest and Golf Magazine and watching more of this. And you know what I went to? I changed putters three times and then I changed my grip and then I quit looking at it. Now I look at it and say, well, I know that's right to left, but could it go left to right? And then, and I became too technical in my mind. So, you know what I start now, what I'm doing right now, I'm on the green and I'm thinking about everything that I need to do. There's clutter out the ass in my mind. And the worst part of my game right now, honest to God, truth, the most is putting. And I got way too, I overthought it instead of just react. I'm trying to get back into it, but you still fight against it. You say, well, wait a minute. I saw the guy on TV who's Dave Pell's petty. I should be a great – I'm watching it. Well, what do you feel comfortable doing? I think it's the same thing here. What happens, Segs, you get locked in as a player is you start to see things and how you're supposed to, and you forget to play. You forget just what guy to play. And I think that we have a lot of guys that get to a point where they get so technical, they clutter up their mind, and they forget just to react. Because when you were reacting at your best in anything, aren't you better at it? I know I am. That doesn't mean ill-prepared. But once the game starts, we prepare the 6 days. Dude, you got to fucking let it rip. When I was at my worst as a quarterback, overthinking coverage. Well, man, it's a strong safety blitz. But what happens if, well, don't borrow trouble. And I think you get caught up into that. And so what happens is clutter begat indecision. Indecision begat late. late means bad things when you're playing in the NFL right. or a high-ranking college football conference, and it becomes a problem. And I think guys overthink it to the point. Great point here by Jordan Spieth. Spieth was as good a player as there was in the world 5 years ago. The guy was lights out.
He was Scottie Scheffler.
Look who struggled, even though he's on the Ryder Cup team, who's had an awful year, is Colin Morikawa. He's changed caddies like five times this year. So what happens is you start to think, well, it's somebody else. It ain't me. Well, when I got the ball in my hand, I don't give a rat's ass what the play call is. Make a smart decision. Goes back to hero ball. Okay, it's not all going to work. Throw the check down and we'll tee it up again. So I think the ability to – the number one thing for quarterback, aside from the mental and emotional toughness I've talked about on here, is to be able to let go of clutter and go play, man. Just react. I've never met a quarterback who overthought it. There was a that could sustain greatness. The best ones I saw, prepared, I'm good, let it rip, man. Let it rip. Hell, the best games I've had is when you, in your mind, have convinced yourself you don't care. When you do care, I'm prepared. But you know what? I'm not going to overthink this shit. Cover two, and I'm going to attack it.
Right.
And I think sometimes we overanalyze, and you are – then when you're in football, like I said, you blink and you're late at quarterback, the play's done. You got no shot.
Do you feel like it's kind of the same thing for the coaching? Like, let's just say the offensive coaches right now in the league, where it feels like they're all trying to one-up each other in terms of – well, you go this deep. Well, I can go this deep in my playbook and I can start adding plays. And it's at some point, it feels like we go too far in terms of like, oh, I'm going to scheme this up so crazy that the defense will never know what's coming. But the problem is you've made things so crazy on your offense that your players are even kind of like, what the hell is going on right now? And that should be able to mess with a quarterback as well. I mean, it goes back to the, you know, when back in the day when, you know, and my boys right now, they're 10, they run T and they run spread. They run like three different formations and they just beat those, let's say 15 plays into the ground, and it allows them to kind of just play free. And yeah, I mean, they're 10, so they're not going to learn as much.
Because they know what they're doing and they're confident.
Right, right. And it seems like sometimes, even especially with young quarterbacks coming in and having to play immediately, like we see across everywhere, that with this offense that is so in depth, like if you're a yard off, if the wide receiver is a yard off, the quarterbacks are taught to throw it to this spot. Well, if that guy doesn't, if he cuts it a yard short, it's an interception. It's just so technical. It feels like that it kills some of these young quarterbacks.
Such a great point. Yes, we have. And if you're not mentally tough, you beat your confidence into the ground. Now, that's just part of the player. Listen, this is pro football. They don't have time to wait on you, but they still need to coach you. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. And anybody that thinks that egos don't get involved with scoring more points or looking like Sean McVay or what Andy Reid, you know, doing those mm-hmm. things that you want to, I want to have an offense like them. And then coaches try to get too cute way too often. Double reverse pass on the 12th. Sometimes it works. We saw over the weekend, who threw the reverse pass? I think it was Detroit. Didn't they throw a touchdown pass on a golf? He pitched it back to the running, the receiver. He came around through. Yes, yesterday.
Yeah.
Threw a touchdown pass in the end zone. Started looked like he was going to run, pulled it up, threw a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does. And you try to get too cute. Well, I'm going to show him that I got that in my repertoire too, right, Six? So it does exist. But and I think it exists more than we think it does. And I will tell you this. I've said it before. The mid-90s. The early 90s, the 80s, 90s Cowboys and 49ers. Norv Turner was my coach, coached the Cowboys as their offensive coordinator. And Steve Young, who's my point is I've talked to people in both during that reign.
Yeah.
Emmitt Smith, you know, he's been on our show, about what made him great. And do you realize what they were doing? The number one goal for a coordinator, if I'm coordinator, is to create mismatches for my offense, to make it look more complex to your defense than I – But simple to my offense, which means I'm a big window dressing guy. I like motion, and I like to motion a guy to see if they're playing man. I like shifts. We're not doing a whole lot. We're just a little window dressing, and bam.
Yeah.
Then we'll snap. I like that. I like playing fast, and I like window dressing. Not desperate, but urgent. But I do like, because I like to create that. And can we create it? Is we going to get a running back on a linebacker? Are we going to get, you know, Nico Collins on a safety because we moved him inside one time? All those things that I'm trying to create. And that's the goal, and to find that matchup problem. The problem is if you overload it too much, your own guys walk in the line of scrimmage saying, right formation, what's the route here? It happens, and it happens as a young quarterback. Let me tell you, most quarterbacks, Segs, I don't care what they tell you, they walk up to the line of scrimmage as a first-year quarterback, they don't have a clue what they're doing. Because in college and high school, they told them where to throw it. Now, dude, oh, they rotate this way, you got to throw this way, but it's a 4 week, so be prepared for the side adjust. If we got it blocked up, I want you to make the back come on over to the left, protect on the left. Now we're going to throw the side adjust to the right because I want your backside protected. But if it's third and four, I give you the right to throw a hitch. If it's corners off, middle of the field close. Middle of the field, it starts out close. They rotate to middle of the field open. Now a hitch doesn't work. So what am I doing? Oh, I work the inside hitch as opposed to it's the quick game in the gun. So it's catch and release. But under center, it's three without a hitch and throw it. And oh, by the way, that rush end has been dominating my rookie tackle. He's got three sacks in the first half. And now my head goes right to him when it shouldn't. It should go to the right to the strong safety blitz. Oh, by the way, you still got to play football.
Right.
What the 49ers and Cowboys did is they about 10 or 12 passes, about five or six runs. But you know what they do, Segs? They dress it up with different guys running it, but it was the same thing. So their execution of it was natural. It became set. So when Aikman came to the line of scrimmage and you got trips and a bang post on the backside, you one thought. First off, check and protection. Are they bringing an extra? Oh, they're not. Safety's cheated from the middle of the field to the right hash because they think it's trips. And Michael Irvin gets a skinny bang post on the backside with an outside leverage corner. Boom, touchdown.
Yeah.
And Aikman didn't think – he knew pre-snap. I'm banging it there. Now, if they rotate, boom. Oh, I'm late throwing the backside to the front side dig. Check down. Second and four. We'll tee that up again another time. Because you know now, boom, 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 out. Getting through everything. A young quarterback's like, even when you think you know, you're like, oh. Then what does their head do? Sags, watch him. Head goes right to the rush.
Yeah.
Boom. Now you come back up. The window's already closed. Now you're late to the second window, so you're looking at third. Now all of a sudden you're saying, could you block Michael Parsons for 3.2? Hell no, I can't block him for 3 seconds. I mean, you're 2.5 if you're lucky.
I got, I got you.
Starts to add up, and then you get your ass kicked. And then you got to come back and do it again. So what are you doing? You're gripping a little harder. Hell, I thought Daniel Jones couldn't play. Apparently they've cleared the clutter out of his mind. He's playing out of his ass.
Steichen's helping him.
That's exactly right. So what didn't work there is working so far two games in. So me, the number one thing about aside from mental and emotional toughness is get rid of the clutter. I'd rather run 8 plays 14 times a game than I would 57 plays and wondering if my guys understand the concept of what we're trying to get done. And when you clear the clutter, we all become better because all the guys who are in the league can play. It's just, do you fit with the system? And to answer your question, organizationally, you give me good players. Coaching, are you coaching the coaches and are you teaching, not just yelling and screaming? And as a player, are you putting in all the other stuff that goes with not just the 2 hours you're on the field or the 2 hours in your meeting room or the 5 hours in your meeting room? Are you doing all the other stuff that allows you to clear clutter? When does clutter come? Six, indecision, right? You start borrowing trouble and chasing a ghost, and before you know it, you're late. And like I said, two places you can't be late, Six. At the batter's box when somebody's pumping 100, you ain't catching up to that high cheese. Right. And you ain't catching up to a coverage that if you're late getting through it, if you're late to the first one, what happens now? I'm late to the second one. By the time you get to the third one, it's closed down and you're laying on your ass and then trying to be a hero. We're all in the vicious cycle of desperation. Watch the quarterbacks tonight, Geno, whoever, if they're under control and they're feeling it, the way the Chargers should be going into this game confident out their ass, right?
Yeah.
Watch, see, and you'll see the decision-making process of these Stroud, and anybody at Baker Mayfield looks like he's making good decisions.
Yep.
He's gotten confident now. It's taken him three or four teams, but now look at him. He's in control. I'm anxious to see it all, but it's such a fragile position. And we just named a bunch of guys that are going through it. Daniel Jones was left for dead. And now everybody's so glad that he's the quarterback in Indianapolis, right? So it's crazy. And we can't get it all in 8 hours on a show. That's too much clutter. So we clear out the clutter. We'll be back doing it again tomorrow, brother.
Yep. Well, that'll do it for us. Enjoy Tampa at Houston tonight. It's the first game. And then we got the Chargers visiting your Las Vegas Raiders. And I'm interested to see how Ashton Jeanty continues on in his rookie season with some good players around him. With getting Geno Smith at quarterback, I think will really help Jeanty.
And they finish in second place in that division, Sags?
Well, with the way Denver started, we still got to see a few more. And like I said, let's get Kansas City, Rice, and Worthy both back. Now, can they get to 3-3? I think without those guys, or without Rice, let's say, And then I think Kansas City could kind of take off and still be a sneaky team. But with the way they're playing right now, they look old. They look slow on offense. They look a step
behind everything, don't they? Yeah. Segs, you know what's going to happen? Andy will figure it out. They'll get the two guys back. They'll trade for a guy. They'll go on a 9-straight game win. And
they're going to be like 13-4 at the end of the year.
Hey, home field advantage. Yeah. Mahomes has got 40 touchdown pass. Like, oh, what a shot.
Okay. Going to be like, well, Allen.
Well, Mahomes reluctant to say, man. Kansas City, they're not very good. Their offense right now is not. They are not good.
Yes.
They are not good. But it's Mahomes and Andy Reid. Put it this way. I got a fighting chance, dude. I got Brady and Belichick. I got a chance regardless of the rest of the personnel. And Mahomes and Andy Reid, I got a fighting chance. The problem is they're right now playing lightweight football against heavyweights, and they've been beaten back-to-back weeks by a couple, one for sure heavyweight and one in the Chargers. Trying to be one. And tomorrow, Sakes, some we will. And UCLA.
Yep.
Who else lost their job? Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech.
We'll talk also about how quickly are we supposed to move on from quarterbacks and coaches and coordinators. The patient friendship thing or the I don't care if you're my friend. You got to go, son. That's what we got to decide in this quarterback. Where's your loyalty lie and how much should there be? UCLA's program right now is abysmal, dude.
That Rose Bowl looks like
a swap meet, okay?
It really does.
A smattering of people. Matter of fact, swap meets will have more people come to their game than UCLA is.
Right.
And I'm not saying that because I'm a Trojan. It's a hard watch.
We'll have to figure out who is available, who would be good picks for these two programs in UCLA and Virginia Tech, because Virginia Tech can be a sleeping giant.
It's a great place, a great home field advantage. That's a job people will stand in line for. I'll tell you what, if he was available, you know who'd go try to get him today? They try to go pluck South Carolina to get
Beamer. Oh, yeah, with Beamer.
Get Shane Beamer there. Yeah. He's not going anywhere. But you also don't want to be the guy after the guy. After the guy, you do not want to be the guy. I know there's been three or four guys since his dad is not the coach, but just keep doing your thing right now, Shane. You don't want to go after fall after your pops right now. Go build something at South Carolina before you think about that job.
And Pat
Fitzgerald's going to be in the mix for a couple of these. You watch.
Yeah, that is an interesting name I've already seen. And with what happened at Northwestern and kind of how that's all shaken out, you feel like he's going to be in the mix for some of these. I also want to talk about something Shedeur Sanders did, not recently, back earlier this year. And then Theo Von made a bet with the Vandy QB. What does he win? Because he did win the bet, but what does he win? Okay. We'll talk about that as well.
Quarterback pimping out mobs, but I know it's talking to Theo Bond's like, well, hell, I don't want any money. I want to. Who's this? He's got her circle. Classic bet. Hey, man, if we can beat him, I don't care what you do. Mom can take care of herself, and I'm sure Theo's going to be humble in the rest, whether he goes on it or not. That's a classic bet, and it worked for Vandy. They're playing some. That's a good. I'm telling you what. Go ahead and blink on Vandy, and they'll find a way to beat your ass, as we saw.
They always seem to beat somebody in the SEC that they shouldn't, and they come up.
Well, maybe they should now, Sigs. Maybe they should be. Yeah, they should. No doubt. Yeah,
they should. All right, well, that'll do it for us. Enjoy Monday Night Football. We'll be back tomorrow here at noon Central right here on Unpaved. Thanks to Sean, Laura, Triple E. What's up?
Oh, my putting and my – game right now, and I'm going to get to the range, and then I'm going to go play 18 holes. And you know what I'm going to do? Putt for like 3 minutes, and then hit the range. Right. The same things I said here, told you that I got to get better at, like I was. I'm going to go work on it for about 3 minutes, and then just go play and realize, Sean, no wonder you're three putting 10 greens, you jag off. So right,
you'll putt the first green. We all know it.
I can friggin' guarantee it's got to land in the hole for the fairway for me not to put the three putt on the opening green. I promise you that. We'll do it again tomorrow, brother. Great stuff.
Yeah, you enjoy the golf course. Thanks to everybody who listened. And we'll be right back here on Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager. Thanks, guys.